The ogre stomped toward her, growling. Tane scooped up a piece of cobblestone that had broken under a heavy foot. None of his other charms were going to be much use, and he had to do something. He drew back his hand to throw. He didn't have to. As the ogre lifted a huge arm to strike, a silver-blue manacle materialized around its wrist, and then another further up, and then more, all the way to the shoulder. The magical bindings wrenched the creature back. More shackles materialized on the ogre's other arm and around its ankles and knees. A dozen men and women in blue uniforms and caps spilled around the halted Ankrist carriage, chanting in the lingua magica. Indri's squad had found them.
Thank the Astra. Tane let the rock fall from his hand. They can handle this.
And then the ogre moved. Roaring in anger, straining every muscle in its body, it moved. Against all that astral power, it took one step and then another. With slow inevitability, it advanced on the blue caps. A silver-blue shackle around its bicep shattered, and it picked up speed. Almost as one, the blue caps drew a dozen Ankrist pistols and readied to fire.
No, don't hurt him!
Tane swiveled to see Noana Uthar running up the street, a look of sheer terror on her face.
He doesn't know what he's doing,
she shouted.
Please, you have to let me handle this.
She darted past Tane to put herself in the blue cap's line of fire, towering over even the tallest by half their height again. There were no Ogryn among them.
Step aside, Senator Uthar,
ordered a dwarven man standing at the front of the blue cap line. None of them lowered their pistols. The senator didn't answer, just turned her back on them to face the ogre.
Be still, Odith. Mother is here.
Her eyes fell to the bleeding wounds left in the ogre's shoulder by blade and pistol.
Oh, my dear child, what have they done to you?
The ogre slowed at the sight of her, recognition lighting its dull eyes. She laid a gentle hand against its cheek. His cheek, Tane supposed, although he hadn't thought of the creature in those terms until that moment. And then Noana Uthar started to sing. It was soft and lovely, a lullaby by the melody, except the words were in the lingua magica. The ogre's lopsided eyes slowly closed. His great ugly head dropped to his chest, and his huge shoulders slumped. He fell to his knees and then collapsed to the ground in a heap, snoring loudly.
You see,
Senator Uthar said, turning to the dwarven blue cap who'd spoken before.
You don't have to hurt him.
The dwarf motioned the others forward. Apparently he was in charge.
Secure it,
he said. And the blue caps started to do just that, moving to surround the ogre and renewing their shackling spells.
Senator, I'm going to need an explanation.
Please,
Uthar begged, tears glinting in her eyes. Even kneeling, she was taller than the blue cap surrounding her, but in that moment, she looked very small.
Don't take him. You have to understand. We tried for so long for a child. When Odith came, I couldn't bear to give him up to the sanctuary. You can't take him from me.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, but it's the law,
the dwarf said, not unsympathetically.
We have to take it. Him. In. People have been hurt.
It wasn't his fault,
Uthar said, but there wasn't much fight in her voice. She knew what had to happen.
He doesn't understand. He was just afraid.
That doesn't explain this, said Tane, and drew the brass mask from his belt. The dwarven blue cap went pale under his beard.
Is that?
This is what the Emperor's mask wears, said Tane, and pointed at the ogre. And it was in his room. Senator Uthar looked at the mask, blinked, and then met Tane's eyes with fear in hers.
I've never seen that before in my life.
Well, you'll have to convince Inspector Lovell of that,
the dwarf said.
You're coming with us.
You don't understand,
the senator said urgently.
I didn't put it there, and Odith couldn't have. Which means it must have been him.
Chapter 15
She's claiming that she was framed by the actual mask, said Indri. It's not a very strong case. Our diviners confirmed that she's hiding something, but she won't say more.
Tane and Katka sat in the holding chamber at Stookton Yard, a small room with benches along the walls where prisoners were kept awaiting processing and questioning. They'd just come out of initial questioning themselves, though there would likely be more after Noanna Uthar's interview was complete.
So you think it's her?
Tane wasn't so sure. He'd seen the look in the senator's eyes when he'd shown her the mask, and it had been deeper than just fear that she'd been caught. He wanted to believe the case was done, but he had to know for certain. Indri raised an eyebrow.
Do you care what I think? I told you not to do anything, and instead you let loose an ogre and chased it across the city.
Was my fault, said Katka, with an unmistakable note of self-reproach. Only meant to look. Should have stopped him from escape. Stupid.
You didn't know what you were walking into, Tane objected. It was my idea to go in to begin with, and we did find what she was hiding, to be fair.
I'm happy to blame you both, Indri said, glaring at the two of them.
And then her shoulders fell.
It doesn't really matter now. I'm the head investigator in name only at this point. Chief Durin has a likely suspect, and as far as he's concerned, if he brings down the mask before Lady Abena returns, she can't very well punish him for pushing me aside while she was away. He's leading the charge against Senator Uthar.
You don't think she did it? Tane knew that tone in her voice. She had doubts. You think he's focusing his attention in the wrong place? Indri shrugged.
We know she didn't kill anyone, at least not directly. We've questioned her staff, and her alibi holds. The current theory is that she had the ogre do it. He's got the size and strength you talked about, and wouldn't need magic if it was all artifacts.
I don't know if that's a much stronger case, said Tane. Doesn't it seem a bit convenient? After all this, the mask just keeps his costume in his top drawer, and dear little Odeth didn't particularly strike me as the silent assassin type. Katka nodded.
When I fight mask was different than ogre. Both are strong, but ogre is more like wild animal. No control.
Exactly, said Tane. Would you send an ogre to do anything that requires the kind of finesse we've seen from the mask?
I wouldn't, but I'm told she demonstrated some power over him.
Indri didn't sound particularly convinced.
Simple minds can be dominated by magic. It's not impossible.
She sighed.
The truth is, there are a lot of questions I'd like to ask Senator Uthar, but Durin isn't letting me in on the interrogation.
How does he think she did it? Tane asked. Controlling her son through sendings, fine, it's possible, but how did she get him through all the wards and detections?
It's not actually an awful theory, said Indri. Ogres have a very simplistic astral link, similar to wild animals, like Katka says. And even the strongest astral wards tend to allow for that kind of limited sentience, or we'd have dead birds sliding down wards all over Thalas. It's not quite enough to allow an ogre by default, but Noanna Uthar was a frequent guest at every house the mask targeted. She could have accessed the wards at any time, altered the animal exemptions just enough to admit her son. An adjustment that small would be nearly impossible to detect unless someone was looking for it. We're going over the spells again now, and there are some indications of tampering.
It's plausible, Tane admitted, but...
But nothing. Your opinion isn't needed here, Carver.
Chief Durin strode into the holding chamber from the corridor that led to the interview rooms.
You've been lucky a few times, but we're building a real case here, which you don't know a thing about.
Did you get anything more from her then, sir?
Endry asked. Durin frowned.
What more do you want, Lovial? The diviners say she's lying and she had the mask. You just explained how she had the means. So is no, then,
Katka said with a mocking grin.
Can't make her say more after this long.
Durin didn't respond, just scowled and looked to Indri.
Get rid of these two. We don't need anything more from them. You two can consider yourselves lucky I don't want to muddy the senator's arrest, or I'd be charging you both for breaking onto her property.
Wait, said Tane. You talked about means, but what about motive? Why would she have killed those people? She was acting suspiciously, I'll grant you, but I probably would too if I had a secret ogre in my basement. Wanting to keep her son close doesn't make her a killer.
You're asking me? You were the one seeking around her estate. Suddenly you can't think of a word to say against her?
Durin's cheeks flushed red.
You want a motive? Fine. Jealousy. She had to hide her son while so many houses groom their non-magical offspring as future protectors of the realm. She couldn't take it anymore.
I don't think, Tane began.
I don't care what you think, Durin snapped. Lovial, I need to notify the Lady Protector of my findings. I want these two gone when I come back. and see that Senator Uthar is put in a holding cell until I'm ready to speak to her again.
He crossed the room and let the door slam behind him.
I need to talk to the senator, Tane said as soon as Chief Duren was gone.
What?
Indri shook her head.
No, even if I wanted to, I can't put you in an interview room with her. There are guards on the doors, and they'll have orders from the chief. If Duren hears I tried, I'll be in an even worse position than I already am. Besides, you've done quite enough. He was right about one thing. You're lucky you haven't been arrested already.
If there's even a chance she didn't do it, we're risking the real mask going free, said Tane. Your diviners say she's hiding something, and I think I can get her to talk. If there's something else there, Kadka and I can still act on it, even if you can't. Don't try to tell me this story about the ogre feels right to you. I know you better than that.
Indri looked at him for a long moment, and then she said,
I've got my orders. She needs to be moved to a holding cell.
She strode away toward the interview rooms. Kadka got to her feet, stretched out her neck and shoulders.
It's time to go then, yes? If we can't see...
Tane held up a finger. Give her a minute. Indri emerged from the corridor, leading Senator Uthar and a pair of Ogryn constables. Just common sense, that. If Uthar decided to resist, no one else was going to be able to stop her. Walking at the head of a 9-foot-tall procession, Indri looked no taller than a gnome. She led the senator to a bench near Tane and Kadka.
Wait here a moment. We have a private cell for you. I need to make sure it's ready. I'm sure I can trust you to behave. I'd rather not have to cuff you.
Then, turning to the pair of Ogryn blue caps,
On the door, just in case. I'll be back shortly.
Indri gave Tane a pointed look and then strode down the opposite corridor toward the holding cells. The Ogryn constables followed her orders, taking guard positions over the chamber's only exit to the outside, which left Tane sitting beside Noana Uthar, largely unsupervised. He leaned closer and kept his voice low.
Senator Uthar, I wanted to ask you something. Indulge me?
Kadka moved to stand between them and the guards, lending some degree of privacy. The senator turned her head slightly to look down at him with sad, tired eyes.
You have questions? So do I. Why would you do this to my family? They took my son from me, Mr. Carver.
The way she said it, it didn't matter that her son was an ogre or that she'd broken the law, just that Tane and Kadka had broken her family apart. Tane swallowed and forced himself to look her in the eye.
I'm sorry, Senator, that wasn't our intent, but we didn't put that mask there, and if you can't explain where it came from, you have bigger problems than being separated. If they think he's killed people, they're going to do a lot worse than just sending Odeth to the sanctuary. They know you're hiding something. If it can help him, you have to tell me what it is.
She shook her head, again that fear in her eyes.
No, I can't. It's too dangerous.
They'll execute your son, Senator. If you haven't noticed, no one else is very inclined to believe your innocence, or his.
Spellfire, this is low. It had better work. She didn't say anything for a time, just hung her head in defeat. And then...
Very well.
A deep breath before she went on, in a barely there whisper.
Some weeks ago, I received an anonymous message from a person, or persons, who knew about Odeth.
What sort of message?
Tane asked.
Do you still have it?
The senator shook her head.
No. It was a letter without originating address, charmed to incinerate itself shortly after I read it. It contained instructions to support certain pro-magical proposals in the Senate. To protect my son, I did as I was told. Each week, further instructions came, and I had no choice but to follow them as well. I didn't know who was behind it until today, but...
Her hands trembled in her lap.
It had to be the mask. Who else could have put those things in Odeth's room? And if he could do that... Mr. Carver, he can get into my home. My family isn't safe. If I talk to the constabulary...
Senator, if you would come with me...
Indri was back. Sooner than Tane had hoped, but he knew she'd given him what time she could. She motioned to the Ogryn constables who approached to escort Senator Uthar to her cell.
Please,
Noana Uthar whispered urgently.
I'm telling you the truth. I can't speak freely to anyone else. You too have to stop him.
Chapter 16
You believe her, said Kadka,
leaning back in her chair with her feet on Tane's desk.
I think I do, Tane answered. I wish I didn't. It would be easier if this ended with her.
He knelt beside the bottom cabinet in the desk, where he kept the apparatus that operated his office wards. A flip of a switch, and it was active, draining power from gems he could scarcely afford. But it was worth the cost, given the circumstances. His office wasn't much. A cheap single room at 17 Tilford Street in Port Haven, with a folding screen at the back that hid the mattress he slept on. But it was all he had. The mask wasn't sneaking onto this list of exemptions. While they were up, Tane's wards allowed only himself, Katka, and Indri to enter.
"Is something about sad mothers with you. Always works."
Katka didn't grin her customary sharp-toothed grin. She'd been curiously reserved since the incident at the Uthar estate. Tane had noticed.
"It's not that," he said. "It was the way she acted. She was genuinely afraid."
"Could have been faking."
"I have a feeling that she wasn't."
Tane lowered himself into his desk chair, pulled a near-empty bottle of cheap whiskey from the top drawer along with two glasses, and filled one for himself. He gestured to the other and raised an eyebrow at Katka. She held up a hand to decline.
"That's unusual."
"It's all too easy, is the problem," he said, taking a sip of his drink. "We happen upon the mask at the Deepweld Manor just in time for a heroic rescue. The size of the attacker leads us to the Uthars and their strange activity in the Senate. We find extremely incriminating evidence sitting in a top drawer. The mask is caught, everyone goes home happy, including all the extra guards and security." Katka frowned.
"You think all this is part of plan?"
"Imagine that somehow the mask, or whoever the mask is working for," Tane didn't say Knights of the Emperor aloud, but he knew Katka would get the implication, "found out about Odath. They knew they were going to need a scapegoat after the first few murders, a way to lower defenses, so they blackmailed the Uthars into acting suspiciously in the Senate. They let us get a glimpse of someone too big to be anything but an Ogryn. They lead us to Odath and plant evidence for us to find. We know the mask can get through wards to do that. They give us a story, and it's easy to believe, because the Uthars already look guilty for keeping an ogre in secret to begin with. Then all the mask has to do is lie low for a few days, let everyone think the threat is gone before going after another victim."
"We need to know who blackmails Uthar, then," said Katka. "But let us all burned," she says. "We have nothing."
"We're more or less back where we started," Tane agreed. "We have the list of people allowed through the wards on all three manors, which just gives us a dozen important families we don't have easy access to and no place to start. But there are still a few links we haven't fully explored. The Knights of the Emperor, for one." He sighed, swished the whiskey around in his cup, and took a sip.
"I think I have to try to talk to Nieris. There's a chance he knew something about this."
Katka cocked her head.
"Can he talk? Mind is burned out by Wraith, I thought."
"The Astra Riven are still alive, just empty. Sometimes they respond to certain triggers that meant something to them before, like a reflex."
Katka nodded.
"He is at family estate in country. We have to take rail to get there. Is all right for you?"
Tane touched the battered watch case in his pocket and took another swallow of his drink. He hated riding the Ancrist rail.
"I'll manage. It's a few hours by rail and a day or more by carriage. We can't afford the time. But I'm going alone. There's something else I need you to do."
Katka didn't say anything, just waited. There was a resignation to the way she looked at him. She knew what was coming, and he knew she wouldn't like it. He gulped the rest of his whiskey to steel himself.
"The Silver Dawn," he said. "This Iskar. You said he gave you a way to contact him? You should arrange a meeting. Ideally somewhere safe with lots of witnesses."
"You still think they are part of this?"
Katka said flatly. She took her feet off his desk, leaned forward in her chair.
"Told you, I trust him. Didn't feel like liar."
"Katka, he's the one who sent us to the Deepweld Manor. If we were meant to see the mask, that means someone knew we'd be there. We need more than just a feeling."
"Do we?"
Something flashed behind Katka's yellow eyes. Anger? He couldn't remember ever seeing her truly angry.
"Always you believe people or don't on feelings, like Uthar today. Why does my feeling not matter?"
"Spellfire, I know Iskar made an impression on her, but where did the rest of this come from?"
"It matters, but right now we need to follow every possible lead.
We don't have anything else left, and you have to admit it's strange that this man keeps himself hidden underground when a kobold like you described could make a huge difference for his people. A sign of the dragon heritage they always claim. Why doesn't he show himself? I don't like it.
You don't understand, Carver, said Katka. What is like being goblin or kobold here? Or orc? People Silver Dawn stands for.
That's not fair, Tane protested. People with no magic don't exactly have it easy in Thalas. I spent my whole life fighting that. She shook her head.
It's different. No one sees you have no magic. Not like they see fangs, scales, skin. Maybe Iskar hides because it's dangerous to stand out. Makes people angry to see things outside what they know. Just want to see what they expect. Greedy kobolds, sneaky goblins, scary orcs. Like me. Just muscle. There to fight, not think.
She scowled, shook her head.
But every time since we start this case, I am not strong enough. I can't fight Mask, can't stop Ogre, can't even get away when they take me in tunnels. If I am not more than muscle, I am nothing.
So that's it. I should have seen it sooner. Katka, that's not... I don't see you that way. I couldn't do this without you. We're partners. Friends.
Katka shoved her chair back as she stood.
Then why not trust me? I say Iskar is not part of this. You trust me, you trust him. Simple.
Tane spread his hands. It's not that easy. If we don't do something, people are going to keep dying, and our name is going to be the excuse at every scene. We have to find the mask, and I don't know where else to look. He took a deep breath, poured himself another finger of whiskey, and tossed it back.
Shouting isn't going to help. She'll see reason. She just needs a peace offering.
Look, I do trust you. If you say Iskar is clean, he probably is, which means his people really did see the mask that night, and they might see him again. That's as good as anything else we have. It's worth asking a few questions.
Fine. I will ask, because maybe they see something useful. It's not just you who wants Mask found.
Katka fixed him with a fierce, yellow-eyed glare.
But I am not stupid, Carver. You say that part to make me go, not because you believe. Every day I watch you trick people with words. You call me partner, but think I won't see when you use same tricks on me? You are no partner.
She stalked to the door, threw it open.
And maybe not friend I think you are, either.
Before Tane could say anything more, the door swung closed behind her. Chapter 17 Katka gave Carver ample time to leave for the Anchorist Rail before returning to the office the next morning. She wasn't in the mood to see him again. The door to 17 Tilford Street looked much like the others in the long, joined brick front that took up this section of road, all painted in flaking green with a pair of high-set square windows. The only thing that made this one stand out was the small plaque centered beneath the windows, stenciled with the words Consulting and Investigation. A space had been left above for a name that they hadn't yet chosen. Carver refused to entertain the idea of running with Mage Breakers. She tried the door. It was locked. Didn't mean he was gone yet. Carver insisted on using traditional locks in addition to wards for security, a practice he often complained had been forgotten in Thalas. She couldn't hear him moving around inside, though, and she had sharp ears. She fished her key from her pocket and let herself in. There was no sign of Carver. She crossed the room to peek behind the folding screen that hid his mattress. He wasn't there. Good. She wasn't done being angry with him, even if she only half understood why. Why she'd felt the need to defend a man she hardly knew, why it mattered so much to her that she be right. She'd been outmatched and outmuscled a few times these past days, and she didn't like how useless it made her feel, but that wasn't the whole of it. She'd spent so long ignoring the way people in Thalas looked at her, because that was just how things were, because she was an outsider and it wasn't her fight. And then Iskar had told her that she could do something to change it, not with fists or knives or bared teeth, but with her voice. She wasn't sure if she was up to that, or what she'd say if she was, or if she even wanted to be. But the idea lingered. If she could do something about it, then maybe it was her fight, citizen or no. And she didn't like running from a fight.
She reached into her pocket and fished out the heavy silver coin Iskar had given her, marked with a rising sun. He'd said to put it in the window when someone would come. The office had a single small window that looked out onto the street, and Katka wedged the coin into one corner so it could be seen from outside. Then she sat herself down behind the desk, put her feet up, and waited. It was near 2 hours before anything happened, and the wait was excruciating. Katka was lounging in her chair, picking her fingernails with her knife, and seriously considering practicing her aim on the magelite lamp on Carver's desk when she heard footsteps outside. Then the slight rustle of something being dropped in the letterbox and a tap on the door. She kicked back her chair, let it clatter to the ground as she lunged for the door to yank it open. No one. They were already gone. She looked inside the letterbox. A small piece of folded paper rested at the bottom, and she pulled it out and unfolded it. Nothing but a single sentence, hastily scrawled. Right out the door, again at the first alley. No way to know it wasn't a trap, but that was Carver's thinking. He'd wanted her to pick the meeting place, and his warnings had gotten into her head. If the Silver Dawn wanted to hurt her, they could have done it last time. She slipped the knife back into her belt and stepped out the door, locking it behind her. The alley mentioned in the letter wasn't far up the street, and no one paid her any mind when she turned in. Alleyways could be dangerous in Port Haven, but even so, everyone cut through them to save travel time. A large figure leaned against the wall and stood straight as she approached. Taller than her, broad-shouldered, gray-skinned, Vladak, the orc. He smiled around sharp tusks as she approached.
"Sister," he said in that deep, rumbling lisp. "It's good to see you again."
"You are one who leaves note?" Katka asked. "Why not just knock? An orc in Thalas is noticed, sneaking or no."
"It wasn't me," Vladak said. "Girdle dropped it off and went the other way. Misdirection, you know. You ready to come with me? Iskar says I shouldn't push it, if you don't want to."
"No blindfolds?"
"No blindfolds."
Katka nodded.
"Then I will follow."
Vladak led her a short distance through narrow alleys, and Katka took care to mind the route for later. Eventually, between two long brick warehouses, he knelt and heaved aside a round metal plate set into the ground, just like the one they'd taken her down before. She went down first, and he pulled the cover back into place behind them with one muscular arm. It was dark, but they had orcish eyes, and here and there old mage lights still glowed. Oases of silver-blue light against the black. Katka knew from listening to Carver that the lights wouldn't have lasted so long without astral power. She guessed they were still connected to the main disk lines. Vladak led her past sealed hatchways and broken ladders until they came to what looked like a dead end. An old hatch was set into the wall, but it had been welded shut all the way around.
"Maybe you take a wrong turn," Katka said, grinning.
"Don't be so hasty, sister."
Vladak took the hatch wheel in both hands and turned it. The door didn't open. It couldn't. But Katka heard a grating noise and followed her ears to a spot low on the wall to the right, where a brick jutted an inch out from the others. She didn't think it had been like that before. Vladak pushed it back in with his foot. When he did, a section of brick parted from the wall beside him and swung open, revealing a hole scarcely over 3 feet high. They'd taken her through a secret way before, too, a section of metal in one of the tunnel walls that slid aside. She'd been blindfolded going in, but she'd seen it on the way out.
"Is not how these were built," Katka said. "Does Silver Dawn add the secret passages?"
Vladak shrugged his big shoulders.
"Before my time. Before the Silver Dawn, too, I think. But Iskar says other versions existed before us."
He didn't say more. Just bent down and crawled through the hole. Katka followed, and then straightened up on the other side to look around. They were in a much larger tunnel, round and lined with glyph-etched copper plates on all sides, where they hadn't fallen away from the wall, at least. The tunnel was sealed off with a great brass plate at the near end, a few feet to Katka's left, and with a crumble of rock and dirt at the far end, some 100 feet down. It didn't look like it had collapsed, though. More like it had never been finished at all. Recessed into the ceiling, enough mage light still survived to cast the tunnel in faint silver blue.
Along the bottom of the circular passage, a flat wooden floor had been erected, and desks and chairs and work tables sat all along it, most showing signs of recent use. A large meeting table sat in the approximate center of the tunnel, surrounded in an array of mismatched chairs.
"This is a real disk tunnel,"
Katka said, pointing at the copper plates along the curved wall. The disks were platforms of Ancrist, levitated by a magical field conducted through copper on all sides. Carver had explained it to her once. There was no other reason for a tunnel like this to exist.
"Why seal it like this?"
A deep, pleasant voice answered her.
"The artifice that created the disks became obsolete with the invention of the Ancrist engine. Plans for a more extensive network of tunnels were abandoned, and in a few places where construction had begun, they were sealed away."
Hiskar rose from a worn armchair at a desk halfway down the tunnel. He'd been hidden by the high back until he stood.
"Katka, I'm so glad you reached out. I had hoped to see you again."
He was as pretty as she remembered, silver scales glittering in the mage light, great wings flaring as he rose, and then folding at his back. As he drew near, Carver's warnings came to her again, unbidden. She was outnumbered now. She glanced over her shoulder at Vladak, standing by the hidden door they'd entered through. It was closed now, only seamless brick showing through where one of the copper panels had fallen away from the wall. Closed, and even if it had been open, she already knew that Vladak could stop her. She might take him by surprise, but the odds weren't in her favor. She hated how hard it was to put that wariness aside. It felt like admitting Carver had been right. When she turned back to Iskar, his luminous sapphire eyes were fixed on Vladak, too. Had he noticed her looking?
"Vladak, if you would give us the room," Iskar said.
"It's fine. He can stay."
Katka wanted to believe in Iskar and the Silver Dawn. She couldn't let Carver's suspicions control her.
"No," Iskar said firmly. "We should speak as equals, and we cannot do that while I have you at a disadvantage. And besides that, Vladak and his friends are some of our busier agents. I'm sure he has things to do."
Vladak grunted.
"You sure, Iskar? I can stay."
Iskar nodded.
"Absolutely sure. Give the others my regards. We'll speak again soon."
Vladak didn't argue, just looked to Katka.
"Hear him out, sister. It meant something to a lot of us how you stopped near us. You could change things for people like us."
And then he turned, fiddled with a wall for a moment, pushed in a few places. The passage swung open again. He crawled through, and a moment later the way closed behind him.
"Well,"
said Iskar, his dragon's snout opening in a fanged smile.
"To what do I owe this pleasure?"
"Maybe I can't resist pretty dragon men."
Katka glanced down at his bare, scaled chest and quirked an eyebrow. He chuckled.
"I almost wish it was as simple as that, but somehow I doubt it. Have you given more thought to working with us?"
Katka shifted her feet uncomfortably. She didn't have an answer to that yet.
"I am not so good speaking," she said. "Can't even make Carver trust you. No stranger will listen to me."
"Mr. Carver is a unique man, perhaps not representative of the larger whole."
Now Iskar turned the full force of those shining blue eyes on her, solemn and serious.
"The people we deal with speak of you very highly, Katka. A half-orc woman who prevents mages from taking advantage of those without magic, who bested one of the most powerful mages in Thalas, rumor has it. That means something to the goblins and kobolds and orcs struggling to make a place for themselves in this city. Your name has weight."
"Maybe."
She didn't know what to do with that. She wanted to believe it almost as much as she didn't. And then a question popped into her head, and she was asking it before she could stop herself.
"Why not you? You say it's dangerous, but a kobold like you would be hero with your people."
Carver's distrust again. But she was curious to know the answer, she had to admit.
"They always say they come from dragons. If they see you, people will believe it. Worth some danger, yes?"
"That is something I have been thinking about quite a bit since last we met. You asked me then about hiding, too."
Iskar bowed his head, and his wings flared slightly.
"I do have my reasons, Katka.
I have been doing this for a long time, and I have found that it is better this way. Not just for myself. There are things I can't... It is more complicated than it may seem. But I understand that it is hardly fair to ask you to do something I will not. I won't push you. I believe your voice would make a great difference, but it is your decision to make.
Not what she'd been hoping for. His answer had a hole in the middle of it that Carver would never have let pass. But there had been something like sorrow in his voice. It didn't feel like a lie so much as something too painful to talk about, and she didn't think pressing the issue would get her anywhere.
"Is not why I came anyway," she said. "We need help with Mask. Your people see him once. I need to know if they see him again, or anything else strange. Every place, every time."
"Of course," said Iskar. "As I told you before, there have been others in the tunnels recently, but I have seen nothing of note since we last spoke. What I can do is put word out for any of our agents with information to meet here. I should have something for you within the hour."
"How do you put out message so fast?" Katka asked. "Sending? You have magic?"
She'd assumed not, given the nature of the organization. He shook his head.
"Too few of us have magecraft to rely on sendings, but we have ways to spread word quickly. Signals and runners, artifacts where needed. We have cells pursuing our agenda all over the city. Vladak, Seskis, and Gertl are one of many. If anyone has seen anything, they will be glad to share it. The Mask's message has to be stopped. Magic for the magical is a sentiment that cannot be allowed to thrive."
He paused.
"Perhaps, if you would like, you could stay and speak to some of us. See who we are, and how your presence could make a difference."
He sounded a little bit uncertain now, almost shy. His tail flicked back and forth along the floor.
"Only if you want to, of course. As I said, I don't intend to push, and we will help no matter what you decide."
Carver would hate that. Letting herself be surrounded in Silver Dawn agents in a closed tunnel with a man who was quite obviously keeping secrets from her. But it wasn't Carver's choice to make. Secrets didn't concern Katka. Everyone had pain in their past. Whatever Iskar's particular pain was, it wasn't her business, and something in the way he talked about it made her trust him more, not less. She understood wounds. It was the people who didn't seem to have any that worried her. And he was just so pretty. Katka always knew when someone returned her interest. That hint of nervousness when he'd asked her to stay was a dead giveaway. She grinned. Maybe she was just being a fool for a pretty face, but it was so much more fun that way.
"Since you ask nicely, I will stay. Send for these agents."
Tane breathed deep and clutched his watch case in one hand, trying to find calm as he watched the gentle hills of the Oddish countryside roll by through the coach window. He could handle the discs, barely, to get around Thallus, but the Anquist rail was something else. His heart was still beating too quickly even now, a quarter hour after disembarking, and he knew by the wary looks the other passengers and the coach driver had given him that there wasn't much color left in his cheeks. And he still had to take a train back to Thallus when he was done here. Can't think about that. Right now I need to focus on how I'm going to get in to see Nieris. He'd hired the carriage to take him the rest of the way to House Nieris Country Estate. It was a 20-minute ride from the rail station, and far longer by foot, so he'd grudgingly accepted the expense. They were nearly there, and he still didn't know how he was going to convince the family he'd disgraced to let him see the Astra-riven criminal son they were trying to hide from the world. Not for the first time that morning, he was distracted by thoughts of Katka. Without her, he would never have stopped Talaine Nieris from destroying Odlan's first airship. He would have died beside Lady Abena, falling out of the sky over Porthaven. And last night she'd walked out on him, called their friendship into question. He didn't have enough friends that he could afford to lose any, and especially not her. There was very little she could have done to help him get at Nieris, but after the way she'd left, he felt somehow less equipped to deal with the problem. Or any problem. Like he was alone again, the way he'd been for a long time before they'd met. He hadn't been worth much in those days. He didn't want to go back. but he also couldn't let the mask get away, and he didn't know how else to move the investigation forward. The Silver Dawn was one of the few potential leads they had left. Still, I should have handled it better. Shouldn't have tried to talk around what she was saying. All she wanted was for me to listen. The coach driver rapped on the wall, stirring Tane from his thoughts. He glanced out the window to see that they'd arrived. The coach was drawing up a hillside road shaded by large elms toward an ivy-covered manor house built in stately elven fashion. There were no guards. Out here in the country, there was little need for them. The carriage rolled to a stop, and Tane climbed out with a nod to the driver, a goblin man with a bushy mustache under his long nose. "Wait here. This might not take long." He'd paid for the trip both ways. He was going to need a ride back when he was done. He approached the doors. There was a glyphed copper panel at one side, and he laid his palm against it. A chime sounded inside the house. A moment later, the door opened, revealing an elven footman in black and violet Nieris livery.
"Who may I say is calling?"
the man asked, standing with impeccable posture on the other side of the gate.
"Tane Carver."
The man's eyes widened.
"One moment."
He closed the door once more, and Tane heard hurried footsteps on the other side. A few minutes, and then the door opened a second time. Now a haughty-looking elven woman in a dress of fine violet silk stood beside the footman. Tane couldn't guess her age at all, other than that she was beyond childhood. She had the smooth, unlined face common to even the eldest of her kind. Her hair was raven black, without a hint of gray, so perhaps younger than Talaine.
"Tane Carver, you have nerve coming here, I'll give you that. What do you want?"
"Taleza Nieris, I take it?"
That was a guess, but an educated one. It was common knowledge that the ex-chancellor's youngest sister had been tasked by the family with caring for him, and there was a family resemblance there.
"I need to talk to your brother."
She blinked in disbelief.
"You want to—" "No, of course you can't. No one can talk to my brother after what you did to him. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to turn around and get back in that carriage before my men throw you off our property."
There was no finesse approach here, or at least Tane hadn't come up with one on the ride over. It was blunt force or nothing. "You don't want to do that. I know you've heard about the Emperor's mask by now, even out here. I'm investigating the case under the oversight of the constabulary and Lady Abena's office." Stretching the truth a great deal there, but it was close enough. "Your family can't afford to look like you aren't cooperating after the airship incident. You certainly can't afford for one of the few people who knows the truth," Tane tapped a finger against his chest, "to start confirming rumors. It's as simple as that. You give me 10 minutes with your brother, or all your efforts to keep what happened quiet are over." Taleza said nothing for a long moment, just glared at him with overt hostility, and then,
"Fine. It doesn't matter, does it? You're wasting your time. He hasn't said anything coherent since—"
She trailed off, turned around, and marched away into the manor. It took Tane a moment to realize he was supposed to follow. The footman didn't stop him when he stepped through the door, just fell in behind. Taleza led the way down a hall of seemingly endless doors, and then outside again to a central garden courtyard. There, in a chair beside a small pool, sat a man whose face was burned into Tane's memory. Talaine Nieris looked the same. A fine-featured elven man with black hair graying slightly above pointed ears, the only visible sign of some 3 centuries of life. He was dressed impeccably, as always, in a black and violet suit that probably cost more than everything Tane owned put together. The only difference was that his bright blue eyes, once full of piercing intelligence, now stared emptily at nothing in particular. He didn't so much as look up when Taleza drew near, and he showed no reaction to Tane's presence.
"Talk if you like," said Taleza. "It's pointless. He might respond, but it's always just random babble."
Tane knelt in front of the chair, putting his face in the ex-chancellor's eyeline. "Chancellor Nieris, do you remember me?" Taleza laughed bitterly at that, but said nothing. Nor did her brother. He just stared ahead as if Tane wasn't there. "You claimed to be with the Knights of the Emperor. I need to know if you've heard of someone called the Emperor's Mask."
"Mask?"
Nieris mumbled. There was no particular inflection to it, just a word triggered by some fragment of a broken mind. Tane wasn't sure if he was just repeating what he'd heard, but it was something. Yes, the mask. What does he want? What do you know?
Mask, Nieris said again.
His hands trembled slightly, but there was nothing in his eyes.
Emperor is coming.
Taleza made a small noise in her throat.
Talaine, do you understand what he's asking? Is that you?
No answer. The Emperor, that's right, Tane said encouragingly. The mask says he heralds the coming of the Emperor. But who is it? Is there a plan beyond just killing people?
Kill,
said Chancellor Nieris. A line of drool trickled down his chin.
Ord, Leon.
Tane's heart seized in his chest, and he pushed himself abruptly to his feet.
Audlian? House Audlian? What about them?
Audlian,
was the only response.
Right, said Tane. Whatever word gets you talking. Audlian? Mask? Emperor?
Nieris was silent. Tane gripped him by the shoulder, shook him.
You have to know more than that. What about House Audlian?
But he had a feeling he already knew.
That's enough!
Taleza pulled Tane away by the arm and put herself between him and her brother.
Leave him alone!
It didn't matter. Tane understood enough.
Spellfire, it makes sense. The first few were practice, or maybe just to get attention. But the real target, Thalia Audlian, is the first magicless elf born to a great house in 100 years. He could be their first Lord Protector since Illivar Audlian. If he dies at the hands of the mask, it's going to be chaos. And Durin is going to tell everyone the threat is gone. No one is going to be ready for it.
For a moment, before he remembered that she wasn't there, he half expected Kadka to answer. But no one did. Taleza Nieris was ignoring him. She'd knelt before her brother and was murmuring to him in a soft voice, trying to prompt a response. There were tears on her cheeks. Tane couldn't help but feel a twinge of guilt over that. Talaine had been a madman, but his sister's affection seemed genuine. But there wasn't time to second-guess his actions. The mask wasn't going to wait, which meant Tane had a train to catch. He turned on his heel and marched back toward the manor's front door. As he walked, he dug the sending locket from his pocket and squeezed it tight in his hand. The pressure in his ears came on almost instantly, followed by Indri's voice.
Tane, what is it?
I'm coming into Stookton Circle Station on the evening train. Meet me there. I know where the mask is going to strike next.
Chapter 18 Tane staggered off the train, trembling, and grabbed the railing on the far side of the platform to steady himself. The other passengers disembarking shot him worried looks, but he ignored them, just focused on catching his breath. A pair of boots entered his downcast eyeline. Stepping near.
Are you going to make it?
Indri's voice. She laid a hand on his shoulder. When he looked up, there was genuine concern in her eyes.
I'm fine, said Tane. You know me. I love trains.
I didn't think anything could get you back on one. I remember trying to get you to come out to the country once with Aleya and me. You were ready to tie yourself to your bed to get out of it.
If it stops the mask, it was worth it.
Indri smiled slightly.
You're a mystery sometimes, Tane Carver. Just when I think you're the most irresponsible idiot I know, you surprise me.
Her mouth turned downwards.
But we have a problem. Durin is convinced he has the mask already, and Talaine Nieris isn't exactly a reliable source these days.
It was only then that Tane recovered his wits enough to notice that she'd come alone.
He wouldn't give you the constables we need? That Astra-riven moron. Someone needs to just throw him into the sea. He'd be about as useful as he is now.
He took a breath, tried to gather himself.
What about the mage blades?
Indri shook her head.
Most of them have been recalled now that the case is supposedly solved. There's only a token patrol left. Lady Abena might listen if I could talk to her, but she's somewhere on the continent by now. Getting her a message through proper channels would take days, and I'd need a focus to contact her by direct sending over that distance.
So we're out of official strings to pull, said Tane. Then we need to warn the Audlians ourselves. They can afford to bring in more guardsmen, at least.
It's not that simple, said Endry. You're forgetting something obvious.
Well, you try thinking clearly when your brains are being rattled around by an Anchorist-powered death trap, Tane said, more peevishly than he'd intended. What did I miss?
More than one Audlian shows up on the list of people who had access to the murder scenes, including Galia herself. When you said mask, Nieris might have given you the name of the killer, not the victim.
Spellfire, Tane swore. I didn't think... He shook his head. But the Audlians have always spoken against magical superiority. I could see them doing this to remove competition for failure, but not as Knights of the Emperor. And if they aren't with the Knights, why would Nieris know about it?
Believe me, it's not unusual for an elven house to have a fanatic or two for magical purity in the family tree. I would know.
Indri was half-elven, and not everyone on her elven father's side approved of his marrying a human woman. Tane had comforted her after more than one awkward family gathering in their university days.
And that means we can't know which of them to trust. Trying to warn them could reveal us to the mask, maybe even move up the timetable of the next killing.
Tane rubbed at the watch casing in his pocket, trying to think. So, we need to watch the estate ourselves? But we don't have the people to do that, without the blue caps or the mage blades. Maybe Katka can get the Silver Dawn to help. He still wasn't convinced they could be trusted, but he did trust Katka, and there was no doing this without help. Except, I don't know where she is, and without a divination focus, you aren't going to be able to get a sending to her either.
She'll be waiting at your office if she's found anything, won't she?
Tane rubbed the back of his neck awkwardly. I don't know. We had an argument last night. She might not want to see me. Indri rolled her eyes.
You really have a way with people, don't you? Well, we can check at least.
That's not enough, said Tane. Maybe she's there, and maybe she can get the Silver Dawn on board, but that's a lot of maybes. And even then, we can't get onto the Audlian estate past their wards. Whether the mask is coming or going, we're going to need a better view than we can get over the walls. I could try to rig something up with Bastion, but it's already getting dark. And then it hit him. He could get exactly what he needed, already built, and nearby. Follow me. In a near sprint, he raced down the stairs from the boarding platform and out of the station. The sun was just beginning to set, and silver-blue mage lamps blinked to life overhead as Tane raced through Stookton. The Stook's townhouse was only a few streets over from Stookton Circle Station, but he was panting by the time he reached the door. Indri was just a step behind him.
The Stooks? She said,
and he envied how easily she was breathing.
How can they help?
You'll see,
he gasped, and pressed his thumb against the bell glyph. A moment later, Endo's voice issued from the mouth of the brass badger mounted on the door.
Who is it?
Endo, it's Tane. I need your help.
Tane? Come in.
The door swung open. Tane led Indri in, and the door closed behind them. On the far side of the small entry hall, the lens mounted in the wall flared silver-blue, moving to size them up.
Constable Inspector Lovial.
Endo said through the wall panel.
I didn't expect you.
They would have met when she'd come to investigate Olmad's murder, Tane supposed.
You'll have to provide a focus to get through the wards.
The small drawer below the lens popped out, and Indri plucked a hair and placed it in one of the small vials. A few short moments later, the inside door opened. Endo was waiting in his chair on the other side, a pensive look on his face.
Is this about the mask?
We know who the next target is, said Tane. Endo frowned.
I'd heard... They're saying that the Uthars were behind everything, that you and Miss Katka helped to stop them.
Tane shook his head. I think the Uthars were a mislead, a way to lower the guard around the Griffin's Roost. He explained the situation as quickly as he could, his theory about the Uthars and his meeting with Nieris.
I'd hoped you were here to collect your pay,
Endo said.
I thought it was over.
He sounded tired. It can be, if we catch the mask at the Audlian estate, said Tane. That's where we need your help. Endo went pale.
Me? Surely the constabulary or the mage blades?
Indri shook her head.
Not an option right now. They think Noanna Uthar and her son are to blame. We're on our own.
But if they can't help, what can I possibly do?
Endo asked. We need your crawlers, said Tane. We don't have the men to watch over the Audlian estate, but a dozen or so crawlers could get it done. And they're not self-aware. They'll probably get through the wards. Indri raised an eyebrow.
Crawlers?
Show her, said Tane. Endo nodded and furrowed his brow a moment in concentration.
A moment later, a half-dozen spider-like crawlers skittered along the hall toward the entryway along the walls and ceiling. Endry took a step back as they approached.
You said he was working with automatons, but I didn't realize. I've never seen anything like these.
One of the crawlers stopped just above her, focusing on her face with its cyclopean silver-blue lens. She stared back, obviously impressed.
They could work.
Endo didn't look so sure.
I don't think I can be seen letting them loose on the estate of another Senate house. I want to help, but if it goes wrong, I'm the only one representing my family right now. I have to think about our reputation.
We'll take care of that, said Tane. All you have to do is supply them.
Someone has to control them,
Endo said uncertainly.
It takes an astral bond to send commands and receive information. That means a mage.
I can do it, said Endry. Just show me how.
Endo nodded. Slightly more confident now.
That won't take long. The automation spells handle most of it, but they're calibrated for household tasks and security, not spying. I need to prepare them. Can you wait a half hour or so?
We have at least that long, said Tane. The mask isn't going to start moving until full dark, and probably sometime after, when the streets have cleared. That gives us time to check if Kadka's waiting at the office, after you've shown Indri whatever she needs to know. Can you have the crawlers delivered to us there?
I think I can arrange that,
Endo said.
Then let's get started, said Indri. We don't have a lot of time. Tell me how to work these things.
It was already dark in the narrow streets of Porthaven by the time Tane and Indri reached his office. In the yellow light of a nearby oil lamp, Tane fumbled for his key, but when he reached for the door handle, he found it unlocked. Kadka must be here, he said. There was no light in the window, but she could see in the dark. She didn't always bother turning on the lamp. But when he opened the door, he only saw an empty room. He could make out the dim shadows of chairs on either side of the desk, but both were empty. That was strange. Kadka seldom remembered to lock up when she was inside, despite his nagging, but she always did when she left. Something's wrong, he said. Could the mask have... No, I left the ward up. No one gets through my wards. But his heart pulsed wildly in his chest, and he found himself stepping over the threshold, looking for signs of struggle. Kadka? The office was silent. Indri grabbed him by the shoulder a few steps in and moved in front of him, her Anquist pistol in hand.
She's not here.
She always locks up when she leaves, he said. Indri nodded and leveled her pistol at the folding screen near the back wall, where Tane's mattress was hidden. The only place to hide in the small room. She moved forward slowly, cautiously. Tane only saw the figure when it detached itself from the darkness, not behind the screen, but against the wall beside Indri, silent and invisible until it lunged. And in that moment, he knew exactly who it was. He'd seen the mask melt into the darkness once before.
Indri, left!
She twisted, saw the movement. A huge black silhouette, some 9 feet tall, head nearly scraping the ceiling. Indri fired, a silver flash against the dark. The light illuminated a brass mask with slits for eyes. The Anchorist ball struck the mask full in the chest beneath black robes, rang against metal, and ricocheted harmlessly aside. Indri had only uttered the first word of a shield spell when the mask reached her. One huge fist clasped her shoulder. She crumpled to the ground bonelessly. Tane recognized the effect. Like a daze wand, another artifact built into the glove. Every instinct told Tane to run, but he'd seen the mask's speed. He wouldn't make it far, and he couldn't leave Indri. Instead, he took stock of the distance, moved a half step forward, and crushed the shield charm in his pocket, the last of the charms he'd bought from Bastion. He'd judged the radius perfectly. A dome of translucent silver flashed into being, centered on him, but perfectly separating Indri from the mask along the edge. Tane rushed to her side, started dragging her away from the mask, towards the far side of the shield, for all the good that would do when the charm failed.
"Who are you?" he demanded. "What do you want? Why bring me and Kadka into this?"
The mask made no sound, just lifted two fists and brought them down hard on the shield. It flared bright silver and held. It wouldn't hold much longer. If brute strength couldn't break it, time would. The kind of charm Tane could afford didn't have the power to last more than 60 seconds.
and when it went, he didn't have any others left. Spellfire, there's no way out. We're going to die. Except, Indri wasn't dead. She was breathing. She'd been dazed, not stabbed with a spike. And the mask had taunted the Magebreakers, but never come after Tain and Katka until now. Maybe.